Good morning, I'm Emmeline Mohebi, in for Debbie Cruz. It's Thursday, June 20th. Mental health experts support the U.S. Surgeon General's call for social media platforms to have warnings. More on that next, but first, let's do the headlines. National City is opening its first homeless shelter. It's a major expansion of the services meant to help people experiencing homelessness in the South Bay. Rosie Vasquez is an advocate for the unsheltered community.
What's great is we're not looking at a pilot program. We're looking at a programming that's already been implemented and that they've been able to find success.
The new shelter will give people food, job training, and a place to sleep for 30 days. San Diegans still have time to submit comments on the three possible routes for the Del Mar Rail Line. SANDAG held an in-person meeting earlier this week to gather more community feedback. The plan is to move the tracks away from the crumbling cliffs. One of the proposed routes runs along the I-5 freeway but starts in Solana Beach. Lisa Huebner is the mayor of Solana Beach, and she says that is news to her and her community.
We had not been notified about this. We found this out a couple of weeks ago. Our community has not been engaged at all. Our businesses have not been engaged, nor has NCTD, the transit operators, nor has the fairgrounds.
SANDAG said none of the routes have been finalized, and the feedback from these meetings can change the proposed routes. You have until July 19th to submit your comments online or by mail. The median home price in the county was a little over $1 million last month. That's a more than 2% drop from the previous month's median home price, but nearly 10% higher than this time last year. The California Association of Realtors says even though we're seeing a slight drop in prices, high mortgage rates slowed down the number of sales. Last month, it took nearly 2 weeks to sell a single-family home in the county. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need. In the state, 73% of parents report higher social media use among their children than in other states. That's according to a recent Brookings Institution survey. Health reporter Heidi DeMarco says mental health experts support the U.S. Surgeon General's call for social media platforms to carry warnings.
On Monday, U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy called on Congress to require a warning for visitors to social media platforms, similar to those on cigarettes and alcohol. He associated the sites with significant mental health harms for adolescents. Child psychiatrist Dr. Willow Jenkins hopes his announcement can influence public opinion on the issue.
With him taking such a strong stance, it really allows us to have conversations with our children, with our school teachers, with our communities, and how we can support our children with their mental health.
Jenkins says social media can also impact youth of color differently. Jenkins says that while it may help connect them with their community, they can also face higher rates of online bullying than their white peers. As Congress considers the Surgeon General's recommendations, Jenkins advises parents to talk openly with their children, set screen time limits, and encourage healthy digital habits. Heidi DeMarco, KPBS News.
In our continuing coverage of changes to the U.S. asylum system, border reporter Gustavo Solis speaks to a family of Cuban asylum seekers. Their story illustrates how migrants with newborn children face unexpected obstacles.
Little Matias is no ordinary baby. His parents are Cuban migrants, and he was born in Tijuana on June 11th. Just 1 week before his family was scheduled to enter the U.S. to pursue political asylum.
También ya tenía vigilancias que me estaban chequeando por parte del gobierno.
His father, Giovanni, is a Pentecostal pastor. He often criticized Cuba's communist dictatorship. In late 2023, he began noticing strange men attending his services.
Cuando estaba dando los cultos, y siempre había alguien del gobierno. Escuchando y espiando lo que yo hablaba.
He says those men were government spies. Giovanni, his wife Magalis, and their two teenage children fled Cuba in October 2023. Magalís didn't find out she was pregnant until a few months later. By then, the family was already in Mexico, heading towards Tijuana. Her due date was in June, plenty of time to get into the U.S., or so they thought. Their plan was simple. Download the U.S. Customs and Border Protection's CBP One app on their smartphone, then fill out an application and schedule an appointment to enter the U.S. The Biden administration unveiled the app last year, and it is now the main way to access the U.S. asylum system. But it's been glitchy.
We are very familiar with all of the problems with CBP One.
That is Melissa Crow, Director of Litigation for the Center for Gender and Refugee Studies.
Including but not limited to the fact that there are a very limited number of appointments that is far lower than the number of people who need them.
The result is long wait times that can be 6, 7, even 8 months or more.
Es como estar en una prisión esperando que alguien te vaya y te ponga una fianza.
Giovanni described waiting in Mexico as being in a prison. They couldn't work, and they lived in constant fear that Mexican immigration officials might deport them. It took the family 6 months to get a CBP One appointment. And Matias was born just 1 week before they were scheduled to enter the United States.
Era tremendo. Era algo... No sabíamos cómo afrontar eso.
The birth threatened to derail their entire plan. That's because CBP One does not let people update their applications. There's no way to add another person, in this case a newborn, to their party. The idea of having to file another application and start the long wait time all over again brought Magalís to tears.
Ya, el temor, tanto tiempo que habíamos pasado, tantas cosas, y fue bien duro.
Volunteers at the Tijuana migrant shelter that the family lived in suggested they reach out to Enrique Lucero. He's head of Tijuana's Migrant Affairs Department.
Pero es algo que se está dando muy común, ¿no? Que nazcan aquí antes de obtener su cita.
He says the long wait times are making this scenario more and more common. Lucero told the family to get Matias a birth certificate and Mexican citizenship papers. Fast.
Porque no hay forma de editar la aplicación una vez que tú registras a las 4 o 5 integrantes de la familia.
So just 2 days after being born, little Matias was in Tijuana City Hall, getting fingerprinted. His fingerprints left tiny black smudges on the official paperwork. And Lucero stood in as the official witness, which is required by Mexican law. Lucero shared Matias's documents with Mexican immigration officials, who then passed them along to Customs and Border Protection. Lucero's intervention worked. On Tuesday, the family crossed into the U.S. together. Giovanni says he looks forward to living in a free country instead of a dictatorship.
Ser libre. Ya no tener que estar en un país donde vivimos una dictadura.
The family won't be in San Diego for long. They plan to connect with relatives in Utah. Gustavo Solís, KPBS News.
Recycling centers have been shutting down across the state for years. That means fewer opportunities for people to recycle their bottles and cans and get back their deposits. Investigative reporter Scott Rodd found the state is sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed bottle deposits, and for years has used that money to plug holes in the budget.
The yard at SA Recycling in Barrio Logan is filled with old transformers, rusty refrigerators, and banged up cars. General Manager Sergio Perez says all of it will be recycled into new products.
I like it because every single day is different. You don't know what you're gonna receive. Maybe you're gonna receive a lot of aluminum. Maybe you're gonna receive a lot of copper tomorrow.
What they don't get much of these days are bottles and cans. That's because SA Recycling stopped participating in the state's bottle return program last year. It wasn't very profitable to begin with, and then neighbors started complaining.
We start having some kind of problems with, you know, with homeless and, you know, a lot of trash outside. We try to work with the city, but it is not working.
Recycling centers around the state have been feeling these financial and social pressures for years. Over the last decade, the state lost half of its bottle recycling centers, from big industrial operators to small vendors next to grocery stores. In San Diego County, the decline has been even more dramatic. And that means
people are sending these containers to the landfill instead of recycling them.
Susan Collins is president of the California-based Container Recycling Institute. She says that's alarming from an environmental perspective, but there's also a financial impact. Here's how California's recycling system works. When you go to the store to, say, buy a soda,
you pay for the can of soda, plus you pay another 5 cents.
That nickel, or dime, if it's a larger bottle, is a deposit that the state holds onto. When the container is brought to a recycler, the deposit is returned.
That creates an incentive to recycle, and it's a really powerful incentive that gets people to bring back containers.
And for some, bottle returns provide much-needed income. But as recycling centers have closed, the recycling rate has also dropped. So what happens to all those unclaimed deposits? Well, they sit in a state fund that, in recent years, has grown and grown. As of last year, the fund had ballooned to nearly $820 million. Collins says this is a problem.
The excess growth in the fund is the result of a program that isn't serving consumers as well as it should be, which turns their deposit effectively into a tax.
And it's become a piggy bank for state leaders when the budget is tight. A KPBS review of state financial records found California has borrowed billions of dollars from the fund in the last two decades in the form of short and long-term loans.
Yeah, it's like an unofficial rainy day fund.
The state controller's office and the Department of Finance told KPBS the borrowing is allowed under state law, but it can take years to repay the loans. And at times, that's put a strain on the recycling fund. The practice has got some recent scrutiny from lawmakers. Here's Senator Ben Allen of Santa Monica at a committee hearing in February.
If we're going to do this, we have to be very clear about the integrity.
Absolutely.
Of this fund.
He was concerned about a proposed $125 million loan meant to help close the budget deficit.
I mean, this was money that was explicitly, collected from consumers, for the purpose of improving our recycling rates.
Last month, the proposed loan was nixed from the governor's budget. CalRecycle is the state department that oversees the bottle deposit fund. They declined multiple interview requests. In an email, a spokesperson said the department is using money from the fund to improve the state's recycling system. But advocates say it's not enough.
We should be investing in the recycling infrastructure. We know how to make it work.
Mark Murray is executive director of Californians Against Waste. He says a subsidy of $2,500 a month would help keep small recycling centers afloat.
For that small investment over the next 3 to 5 years, we could have the 400 to 500 community-based recycling centers we need.
State leaders are now hashing out the final details of the budget. Murray and other advocates say they're calling for millions of dollars in recycling investments to ensure consumers get back their nickels and dimes. Scott Rodd, KPBS News.
Tune in tomorrow to hear about the state's plan to change where and how you return your bottles and cans. MTS has extended the deadline for youth, seniors, and people with disabilities to renew their discounted transit passes. Reporter Katie Anastas has more on who's eligible and how to apply.
Reduced fares are available for people 65 and older, Medicare recipients, people with disabilities, and youth. To keep getting reduced fares, those riders need to verify their eligibility, either online or at the MTS Transit Store or North County Transit District customer service centers. MTS Marketing and Communications Director Mark Olson says they've extended the deadline from June 30th to September 30th.
We just want to make sure that we're giving people more time to go through it and get some more accounts verified.
Olson says MTS has already verified more than 18,000 accounts, but they estimate there are 6,000 seniors and 19,000 youth who still need to be verified. If they don't, their cards will switch to adult passes at the end of September, doubling their fares. Riders can check their account status at ridepronto.com. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
The San Diego VA Medical Center is trying to get the word out to local veterans about the recent sweeping expansion of benefits under the PACT Act. Military and Veterans reporter Andrew Dyer has more about an event happening this weekend.
The White House called it the most significant expansion of veterans' benefits in 30 years. Last summer, a swath of medical conditions related to toxic exposure throughout decades of conflicts became presumed disabilities under the PACT Act. Since then, VA San Diego has been trying to get the word out to local veterans about applying for the benefits for which they may now be eligible. VA San Diego's Scott Gomer says they estimate up to 80,000 veterans in San Diego County are right now completely unaffiliated with the VA.
These are the veterans that we want to reach out to for, you know, a variety of reasons. Some of them may just not be aware of how to sign up for health care.
He says even if a veteran has in the past had claims denied, that things are changing all the time, and some could now be eligible for compensation. The event is Saturday from 10 to 2 at the Kearney Mesa VA Clinic on Arrow Drive. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
Well, that is it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Join us again tomorrow for the day's top stories. I'm Emily Mohebi. It was fun chatting with you all the last couple of days. Debbie Cruz will be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful Thursday, or what I like to call Friday Eve.